can't tell you how many times I've listened to the choir sing their anthem. And I thought, you know, the service could end right here because the words were done so well and they spoke to me. Thank you, choir, and thank you, Bob, and thank you, Bernice, for your gift that you give to us every Sunday. This morning, I'm using as my scripture for my message two verses from the Bible, from Jeremiah 29:11. It says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. They are plans for peace, not disaster, to give you a future filled with hope. And Psalm 71:5 tells me, because you are my hope, Lord, you, Lord, are the one I've trusted since childhood. I spoke a while back here in church about how I read scripture, and I put myself into that scripture to see what it says to me. This morning, I want to share a little with you about my life and the path I have been on during my lifetime. I saw a cartoon recently where a young girl was talking with her father as they watched a basketball game on TV. The little girl said to her daddy, boy, LeBron James is sure popular. And her father responded saying, yes, but there's a downside to all that fame. He gets overwhelmed with requests for his time and his money. To which the little girl responded to her daddy, aren't you glad you're a nobody? Well, I'm sure he didn't think of himself as a nobody. But this young girl thought you had to be either great or you were a nobody. There was no middle ground for her. I think most of us are on middle ground. I'm not some great person. I have not made a ton of money. I don't have people asking me for money, or at least not always. We have been fortunate to be able to help our children and our grandchildren, and we have been happy to be able to do that, but we're not wealthy. We live each day, and we hope that we can continue to take care of ourselves and not need to depend on someone else for our care or our finances. But we don't know. We go one day at a time. I sometimes have a hard time believing I am that important to God. Then I read scripture that tells me, I know the plans I have for you, plans for peace, not disaster, to give you a future filled with hope. And I will read that, Connie, I know the plans I have for you, plans for peace, not disaster, to give you, Connie, a future filled with hope. Or scripture that says, my child, give your heart to me and let your eyes keep to my path. He had plans for me to give me a future filled with hope, and he wants me to keep my eyes on his path. When I read these scriptures, I can begin to believe that I am important to him. When I attended the memorial service here at the church for Mary Myers, I was not aware of the hard life Mary had as a small child. My friendship with Mary began much later in her life, and she never shared that with me. I knew Mary as a warm, loving lady who had a wonderful, loving way with children. She just loved to be surrounded with the little ones in the nursery. And I guess that when I saw that, I thought Mary had that example growing up, and that was where she learned to be so loving. I still don't know her circumstances, but when I listened to the words spoken about Mary, I thought about my early childhood. When I was about 4, my birth parents divorced. As I think back on that, I have no idea why they didn't stay together. And in all the years after that, as I grew, as I got married, and as I had my own children, I never thought to ask my mother why they didn't stay together. I had 2 siblings, an older brother and a younger brother, and we were all close in age. And I remember that my mother worked after they were divorced. When she married my stepfather, we moved to Shelby, and we were still pretty young. I hear so many stories about cruel step-parents, and I can't relate to that. My life was a good life. I had caring parents. I never had to wonder if we would have somewhere to live, food on the table, or clean clothes to wear. We attended the church of my father in Shelby, the Presbyterian Church. We had a wonderful, caring pastor, one who truly loved and cared for the young people, and Reverend Darwin and his wife Maggie were special in the lives of all youth. It was at that church that I met Jean Wagaman, and it's a joy to have her in our congregation. After Joe and I married, we moved to Findlay for his work. We had good friends there. We joined a Presbyterian church there, but we were not active. There was a large church and they didn't need any more help. Then when we moved to Ontario, we started attending Ontario United Methodist Church. There I began to listen and hear scripture in a new and different way. I heard about not only belonging, but about serving. That was new for me, and that has continued through today. I wonder many times what God's will is for my life, whether my path is following the path he set for me. Have I taken my will and made it God's will for my life? Norris Burks writes for the News Journal. He's also a retired chaplain. He said many people ask this question of him, particularly those who are at the end of their life. Have friends told you that you are really inspiring them as you use the gifts you have been given? Then maybe you really are listening to what God's will is for your life, what your path is to be. Norris Burke shared that his wife told him he only became a minister because he couldn't sit still in the pew. I think there were other reasons, but he said that was true. He couldn't sit still in the pew. He shared that his father-in-law, who had been a pastor for over 50 years, said the most certain way you will know God's will is when you know the misery from being out of it. I know there have been many times I have been asked to do something by a pastor in this church, and I must admit I have questioned whether that was something I could or should do. Then I take time to pray. I think about what would be involved. I have grown into who I am today by listening and responding to what I hear. Sometimes it's something on the radio, sometimes it's music I hear, and sometimes it's what I read in scripture. But each time I have responded that I would be willing, I am led and find that each step is a new learning experience. My latest positive response was when I said that I would serve on the DECOM committee for our district. Friends, I have seen, read, and heard from so many people searching for their place in ministry. What an exciting time this has been for me. There's lots of work. Each candidate is required to write several pages, and we must read that before they are interviewed. The rewards are more than I could ever have expected. I don't know how many of you know all that is required to become a pastor in a United Methodist Church, but it's a lot. It's been eye-opening for me as I hear their stories of the calls to ministry and their hard work and devotion to that call. I treasure the time I spend with others on this committee. They are pastors and lay people from all over our district. We listen and we hear from people like you and me who want to be in ministry, following their path. A while back, Steve Santmeyer spoke about his response to God. He spoke to God and he asked him to get through the years when he was transferred by GM to Toledo. Steve drove back and forth each week, staying in Toledo all week long, separated from his family all week long, coming home for the very short weekends, those many years when he thought he couldn't do it, but he did. And when he completed his retirement from GM, he responded to God all the times he had talked with him, and he told God, God, help me get through the tough times and I will serve wherever you want. And he did. Steve was asked to serve as chair of trustees, and he continues to serve in that position today. Steve answered the call and is following that path. When Dave Case was our pastor, he said he wanted our church to do the peanut butter and jelly ministry for lunches for our school children in the summer. That was new, but we said, okay, we thought we could do it. The first year we might have had two or three families, the following year a few more, and now we have many children, many families. We have prayed and God has provided food and food for us to nourish these children. We have people each week who give their time, who come here and work with each family to be sure they have what is needed for the coming week. I think back to that suggestion by Dave Case, and I wonder if we would have thought about it and said, well, hey, Dave, you know, that really sounds good, but you know, we are a small, aging congregation, and we think this could be better done by a larger, younger congregation. But friends, we didn't do that. This was the path that God set for us, and we followed that path. Even those who are not able to help on the days the food is distributed contribute, some financially and others by bringing in food. This is not just one or two people. It is a smaller, aging congregation, and we are doing it. We are following God's path. As I think about this church, I think about all the people who are using their special gifts, following their paths, serving in the background, never really any evidence of who's doing what, but it's getting done. I hesitate to name people because I know I will miss some, but I want to highlight just a few. Each Sunday, we have the volunteers who come in. They prepare and serve Grace and Eggs. We have several who have been doing this for the length of Grace and Eggs. It was the idea of Dennis and Beth Strominger who stepped down, but many who served with Dennis and Beth are still serving today. We have Lynn Fisher, Cindy Townley, Joe Stuckert, the Toth family, who served for a really long time. Recently, Sue Kissling, Megan Reiners, and Jim Schaum have started working on a regular basis. But there are so many others who are available and provide food and their time. Each Monday morning, we have ladies who come into the church. They come every week. They come in to count the gifts from Sunday. Jenny Motley, Karen Wagedals, Nan Shaw, and Sharon P. Simer every week. And then the bank deposit is made weekly. The newsletter that is mailed each month is prepared by Debbie in the office, but Avalon Evans and Prudy Love put the pages together and they get those ready for Debbie to take to the post office. Avalon and Prudy are coming to the church tomorrow afternoon to put together the May newsletter. Dawn Turpin gets a DVD each Sunday with the Sunday service, and she mails that with a copy of the bulletin to all our shut-ins. That keeps them in touch with us. Every week, Dawn does this. Nan Shaw and her wonderful staff prepare the fellowship meals for us. And Nan has also worked many years on the senior lunch, done two times each month. Shirley Wright has done the senior meals for many, 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 many years and is still doing them and is able to secure people to prepare and serve those meals. Nan and Shirley also both work to provide lunches for families following a funeral or a memorial service. Lee and Rita Kirsch have worked on our landscaping the last few years, and they have provided and cared for the large urns at the back door. They make sure they're watered and cared for each week, and don't be surprised to see Lee here in good weather, trimming and caring for the landscaping. Amy Bryan has worked so many years working to organize and do Kingdom Kids and Vacation Bible School. She helps to recruit volunteers for both. Weekly, our ushers are present to be sure all is running well as you come into the sanctuary on Sunday. Then they make frequent walks through the halls during worship to be sure all is well. They're not just going out there and having something to eat, okay? They're checking things out. We have John Grove, who has worked more years than I know, who does the presentation on a screen for us each Sunday. Jeff Davis, Roby Bolin, and Eric Grove take turns serving in the sound booth weekly to be sure we are all able to hear what is going on. Janet and Larry Bixler and Marianne Stotts have worked for years on our community garden. They plant, they weed, they water, and they harvest. And that garden is beautiful. And it serves not just our church, but our neighbors next door and our community. We have committee chair people who serve annually for a 3-year period of time. And then we have all of those who serve on those committees. They attend the meetings and they make the decisions. We have choir members who practice weekly. Rain, snow, cold, it doesn't matter. They are present each week to practice, and then they bless us during worship with their music. Friends, all of these serve this church and serve as volunteers. That's right, they volunteer. I hope I did not miss too many people who have done so much. Each of these are following their path. And I thank each of you and any I might have missed. We have our paid staff, Pastor Peg Welch. We see her weekly in the pulpit, and she leads us during worship and during the week. We have our visitation pastor, Karen Wagonalls. Karen is our connection with our shut-ins, homebound, and those in the hospital. Karen is our connection with each of these special people. Our administrative assistant, Debbie Grove, keeps our office functioning. She welcomes people coming into the church or calling on the telephone, and she also is looking always for ways to cut our expenses. We have our maintenance engineer, Larry Bixler, who is here early every day and makes a daily trip back to our church each evening just to be sure it's locked up and secure. If something is broken, Larry knows how to fix it, or he knows who to call. We usually don't even know there was a problem. We have our custodian, Carla Smith, who took over the reins when Shirley Wright retired. Shirley provided a sheet to Carla that said this is the right way to do it, and knowing Shirley, I'm sure this sheet was detailed. Carla shared with me that her mother came in shortly after she took over that responsibility, and she told Carla, "You're doing the job okay." That was pretty good praise from Shirley. We have Bob Wagonalls, our music director, who not only leads our choir, but provides the inspiration through worship with the music. He also makes sure we have special music during the summer months when the choir is not singing. Dottie Blaney and Millie Keith share as our organists. You know, for some reason, Dottie and Tom need to leave us when the weather gets cold, and then they return when the weather turns warm again. I'm not sure how that figures, but that's what they do. We anticipate that they will be returning May 1st. Friends, we're fortunate to have these two people share those duties. And then we have our wonderful accompanist, Bernice Holman, who is such a great addition to our music program, whom we all love. We feel blessed when she plays with the hymns or provides special music. Bernice also works with some young people and gives piano lessons here during the week. We also have Sue Wills, who prepares the program for the service that we see, the hymns and all the announcements that are on the screen during the service. I know I have not listed everyone, but friends, this is work to be done. And if we don't use the gifts we have been given, who will? The scripture tells us in Proverbs 23:26, "My child, give your heart to me and let your eyes keep to my path." I challenge each of you today to listen to what God is asking of you, to respond by talking to him, by hearing what he has planned for you. The joy that you will experience makes up for the time and the effort that you will give when you carry out his plans for you. Thank you, and may God continue to bless our congregation with such willing workers who work together to do his work in our community and the world. And as I finish, I just want to remind you to please stay in your place after the final hymn while the choir sings the benediction for us. Thank you.